Hey, what you drinking, baby?
This is the new home for Cheryl Fritz, 1320 WILS, the only Lansing radio station live in Lansing every morning, live in Lansing every afternoon. Welcome to Fritz and Friends, and your host, Cheryl Fritz.
I cannot tell you how appropriate that intro was. What you drinking, baby? Hi, everyone. I'm Cheryl Fritz. Welcome to Fritz and Friends. I am so excited about the guests I have in the studio right now. And in a moment, you'll understand the drinking reference. With me is Mike Nichols with Nichols Law Firm, a noted trial lawyer here in Lansing. Also in the studio, Fred Bell, an attorney with the firm as well. And Jennifer Hensley, who is the administrator. She's kind of going to keep us all on the straight and narrow today. The reason we're talking about the drinking is that Mike Nichols is the author of the Michigan OWI Handbook by West Publishing in its second edition. Welcome.
Good afternoon. Great to be here.
Thanks, Mike, for being here. Thanks, Fred and Jennifer, as well. Tell us about the OWI Handbook, how you came to be involved and write this book.
Quite simply, it's a reference book for Michigan lawyers on OWI and how to represent someone from A to Z, whether it's a basic case to a complex case, whether you're brand new at practicing law, or you've been practicing forever, it's exactly what it sounds like, a handbook on how to handle a drunk driving or an OWID case, which is operating with the presence of drugs in your system.
Now, I talked to Fred for a moment before you got in, and I had to get schooled a little bit. It gets a little confusing. DUI used to be the acronym OWI, and I didn't even have it right with OWI, and it's operating while intoxicated.
That's right. In Michigan, we call it operating while intoxicated. It's the acronym is different in different states.
Okay.
It used to be DUI in Michigan. It's still called DUI in some circles, but the shorthand that most people use now is OWI.
Now, I know you've obviously gone out on kind of on tour with the book, and you've spoken to groups and presented in front of groups as well. How are they using this? Attorneys are using it? Are prosecutors' office using it to know how the other side is dealing with it?
I think both attorneys and prosecutors have the book. I've talked with judges about it who have the book. It is exactly what it sounds like, which is a reference book if you need to look up something real fast on an issue that, you know, might be on the tip of your tongue, but you can't quite figure out the name of that case that talked about the definition of operating, for example, or the allowable variance for the data master test, those kinds of things. It's a reference book. You can, you know, it's I'm holding it up now because Jen is taping this for posterity. It's the size that will fit in your briefcase or attaché, and you can take it with you to court and have it right there.
Right there and ready to go. Now, what we should say, Fred is along just because he's pleasant company, but before we got started, he blew into what?
It's a personal portable breath test device, shorthand for PBT. Sometimes it's called preliminary breath test device. But I brought the BAQ tracker with me. I recently purchased one of these, and I also purchased the LifeLock PBT, which is exactly what many Michigan police agencies use. And what I wanted to demonstrate for you and for the audience is just how unreliable a PBT can be from both aspects.
Sure.
We have a demonstration that we did not long ago with a drinking subject who had, I believe it was seven beers, Jen?
Six.
He had six beers in his system over the course of about 3 hours, and he still blew under the legal limit. And he, you know, is a pretty good size young man, but not huge. And he said, you know, the way I feel, I probably wouldn't drive, but he still blew under the legal limit. And that's one point that I want to make is, you know, a lot of people buy these or they use the BAC calculator wheels, mm-hmm. or you have the app for your phone. I have one.
I don't have that on my phone, but I suppose I could get it.
You can download them. You can get them
Seriously.
On a lot of websites. And they're a novelty and they're fun, but I wouldn't make a major decision in my life, which is whether or not I'm safe behind the wheel. Or legal behind the wheel.
Can I buy that unit that Fred was using?
Sure.
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. They sell them in drugstores. This one I bought from the manufacturer of the device that is sold to police stations, police agencies. This is just the personal device. It's the same software and components. It's just got a different name.
Okay, very good.
And so Fred blew triple zeros, and what I wanted to do, which means this would reflect that his BAC is measured at zero, completely sober.
And because acronyms can get confusing, BAC is?
Bodily alcohol content.
See, again, I would have thought blood alcohol content. So we're clearing all of that up today. And what we're doing, he's been having, he's getting his drink on. He's getting his drink on with some mouthwash.
Yes, I'm going to have Fred swish his mouth with mouthwash, just like you might in the morning. This is Listerine mouthwash right from my office. And I don't believe this necessarily has any ethanol in it. Fred's now swishing at 5:14. Give it a good swish, just like you would when you're getting ready to kiss Bonnie.
Trust us, this is good.
And he's depositing.
And he's going to blow right away
then.
He's
going to blow.
This is great.
Well, if he's triple zeros, then the BAQ tracker is going to buy this video for their website.
Yeah, you're right about that. They will. And what does it show?
Interference.
Okay. Well, we'll try it. Fred, you go over there and go about your business while we keep talking here a little bit.
In that case, that's what it's supposed to do.
Okay. And what does interference mean?
Interference means it got something that interfered with a valid measurement. We'll have Fred try it again in a few minutes after he can. Maybe we give him 15 minutes, which is the required observation time. And we'll,
do you want to swish a little more, Fred?
We'll try it right before.
As a matter of fact?
It's got to be a 15-minute observation time. We'll try it again before we sign off. Those issues are covered in the handbook, and those issues are all over legal circles and judicial circles and law enforcement circles. And the portable breath test device, if you take a PBT, it's not admissible in court because it has a lack of reliability in order to be admissible. And the PBT is different from the breath test that you would take if you're arrested for drunk driving.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you to clear that up. This is a personal device that Fred might use to say, oh, maybe I shouldn't be driving tonight.
Well, it's a portable device.
Exactly.
PBT is portable breath test device. And it's different from what a police officer would ask you to take if the officer decides to arrest you on suspicion of operating while intoxicated. And that instrument is the one that can be used to prosecute you for drinking and driving in the state of Michigan.
Okay. You often hear some confusion when people are stopped by an officer and they're asked to take a breath test. Every now and then you hear something, well, I refused. You know, you have the right to do that?
Yes, you do. You do. Because a breath sample is considered in many ways a search or asking you to give evidence against yourself. So they will not get evidence of your bodily alcohol content without a search warrant if you refuse the chemical test. The chemical test can come in three forms: breath on a data master, which is different than this portable breath test device, blood, drawing blood from your body, or urine. I've never seen urine used in a case.
But
breath or blood, the officer chooses. If you refuse, which you can do, the officer will then ask a judge for a warrant. If he gets it, then they can take it by court order. And what will happen is the officer will then tell the Secretary of State, hey, this person refused, suspend his or her license for a year and put 6 points on their license.
Without any
decision made on your criminal case.
Okay.
And then you've got to go to the Secretary of State, and the officer has to prove basically four things in order for your license to actually be suspended. But it's going to be a lot easier for the officer to do that than in a court of law, where, as we all know, the burden of proof is very high, proof beyond a reasonable doubt.
Do you recommend that folks refuse breathalyzer tests as a trial attorney?
Well, without giving legal advice. This is not legal advice, and I'm not advising anybody to break the law. But yeah. I will say two things. I can't think of any reason why you would take the PBT when you're pulled over. I really can't think of a reason why, because as we just saw, they're not reliable.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you put anything in your mouth that's consistent with alcohol, the PBT might show that you've got alcohol in your system, because it can't tell mouthwash from Jack Daniels or Bud Light. And what will happen if you refuse the PBT, it's different from what we just talked about,
exactly,
Cheryl.
Exactly.
If you refuse the PBT, what will happen is you'll be assessed with a fine for a civil infraction. Now, what I find in my experience is if the person's then arrested, there are two breath tests. If you agree to take the breath test, there are two samples that the officer takes. You take the first one, you don't have to take the second one, and that is not considered to be a refusal. So you're not going to get that automatic license sanction or suspension. And if you take that first one, that's, you know, going to be easier to deal with for a lawyer representing you in court, because there's no second sample to say, hey, the first sample was right consistent with the second sample.
Correct.
Because then a prosecutor is going to argue, hey, we got two and they're pretty darn close, or they're right, you know, they're right exactly the same. Look, they can't be wrong because we got two that are the same or close. So I find that if a person takes that first breath sample, that's not a refusal, so they're okay with the license hit, and it's easier for the defense attorney to deal with when negotiating or going to trial on the case.
Very good. We'll be right back with Mike Nichols and Company on Fritz and Friends 1320 WILS.
You're listening to Fritz and Friends on More Compelling Talk Radio, 1320 WILS.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Cheryl Fritz on Fritz and Friends, 1320 WILS. Pardon me?
Danger Zone.
The Danger Zone. Well, it is with you folks in the room with me. With me is...
We keep you safe.
There
we
you
the,
go.
We keep the Constitution safe.
Oh, that's another show. And that's a show we'll have to do,
okay,
Mike.
Absolutely.
It is a show we'll have to do. With me is Mike Nichols, trial lawyer, noted trial lawyer in Lansing, and author of the Michigan OUI Handbook for West Publishing. Also in the studio with us is Fred Bell, an attorney with the firm as well, who's been drinking or swirling mouthwash. And we're going to retest his bodily alcohol content. Did I get it right?
You did.
Yay, I'm learning something. And also for Jennifer Hinsey, who's an administrator with the firm. The super drunk laws that just came about, went into effect on Halloween. How has that changed things up, and how has that changed the game at all?
Well, it's changed the game from a standpoint of if you are convicted of having a breath or blood alcohol content, bodily alcohol content, of 0.17 or higher, and it's 0.17 grams per 210 liters of breath or 100 milliliters of blood, if you are convicted of that, then the penalties are harsher. The maximum possible penalty and the license sanction. Plus, you will be ordered by the judge. The judge doesn't have any discretion. The judge has to order you to enter into a treatment program. So that's how it changed things.
Some mandatory things are in place that can't be played with.
Right. And you can't get a restricted license for 45 days from when you're sentenced by the judge. And you have to have what's called a breath alcohol ignition interlock device on your car in order to get that restricted license.
Mm-hmm.
So that's expensive.
It ups the ante significantly.
It really does.
We're going to come back to Fred and have him blow on the PBT in a little bit. What's your best advice? I mean, this is holiday season. We have a company party tomorrow night. I mean, I think I'm going to probably see you at a company party later on this evening. As a matter of fact, what is your best advice, knowing what you know, the ins and outs, and literally you wrote the book? What's your best advice for folks?
Well, it's really hard to be a social drinker this time of year, right? I mean, to go out and just have a few, and you linger at a party, and then you have to go to a second party because a lot of nights, you know, you might have two or three at one shot. And there are a lot of instances where I see people come through my door with a charge and they say, I drank one an hour, but it was over the course of 6 hours, or I drank two an hour and it was over the course of 4 hours. I think, and this is just my own personal view, if I'm going to order that third drink or crack open that third beer, I've got a cab coming or a ride, because, you know, your judgment gets impaired by alcohol, and that's when you always make what Vince Vaughn would say, some bad decisions, right?
Absolutely.
Let's see if we can get hopped up enough to make some bad decisions. And so, you know, if you don't have your plan when you go out to start the night, once you finish that second drink, and if you're thinking about a third, get a cab called or a ride or do something.
Yeah, stop it too or have a plan.
Right, right. Because you cannot predict how your bodily alcohol content is going to be measured, whether it's by that data master that we just talked about or a blood draw or a PBT, because your body changes from day to day and from hour to hour, and everybody's different. And I think all those rules that we hear, you just really have to throw out the window. Yeah, to a large degree, you just can't trust them.
We may have to – well, you've got a focus group, which I think is fascinating. We're going to come back with Fred in just a moment. Brief mention, because we may have to come back and talk about this, but a focus group to help you get ready for a big trial.
I do that with pretty much any time I have a case that I know I'm going to go to trial on. I do something to prepare on my feet, whether that is have a mock jury or a focus group or – what we're doing tomorrow, which I do a lot now, the active method session.
And what I love is when we talked before is you go into this instead of the defense attorney, you go into this and play the prosecutor, as you said to me, to get into the head and get the strategy.
And before I answer that, I think we're going to have Fred get ready to do another blow.
Oh, Fred's blowing into the PBT again after swirling mouthwash a few times. And the waiting for the allotted 15 minutes, correct? Oh, he's turning red.
Wow.
That was a good one.
He exhaled all the way, 0.045.
With simply swirling mouthwash 15 minutes ago.
And it is 527 by that clock, and you were triple zeros.
At 508.
508.
At 508. And all he did was swirl mouthwash.
Did you get that, Jen? Did you get the 0.045?
Yes.
Okay.
That's really incredible. That just goes to show.
That's going on YouTube, baby. but the focus group, the active method session, Professor Marge Russell at Cooley Law School has really gotten me into this. And what it is, it's kind of based on the Jerry Spence method of trial preparation, where you stand up and you talk with the participants as the prosecutor. And you talk about what the case is all about and why you've got a good case, the strengths, the weaknesses. You talk about what you think the defense attorney is going to argue. And so that helps you as the defense attorney get in the head of what might be coming down the train tracks.
Mm-hmm.
And then it helps your participants understand, here's what's going on. Here are what questions I might have as a juror. And then you start acting out scenes from either the life of the accused citizen or the complaining witness or from the night. You know, with a drunk driving case,
sure.
You might act out the scene where the person was making the decision about having the last round. It's probably a topic for a show
for another day. Well, we've just teased him sufficiently,
and you should have Professor Russell on because it's kind of her baby, and she has done a great job educating lawyers and students on preparing for trial.
Well, and we can learn a lot from you. Attorney Mike Nichols, author of Michigan OWI Handbook. Attorney Fred Bell, thank you for being here. Do you have a ride home?
Oh, I do.
Okay, very good. And Jennifer Hinsey, the administrator at Nichols Law Firm. I thank
you so
much.
Who videotaped this, and we're going to put it on YouTube.
I'm all over that. We are of this generation. Thanks so much. We'll be back in just a bit.